Well, Dina Martin, welcome to Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, your new album, Destination Moon, is comprised largely of classical tunes and one duet with your father. And your performance this week will be what you call an unforgettable style experience. I think that's a reference to Natalie Cole singing with her father projected on a screen behind her. Is it sort of the same thing?
It's pretty much the same thing. And in fact, it's a great story, because what happened is my handsome husband, John, he found the original handwritten Nelson Riddle arrangement of True Love that my dad recorded. So we went into the studio, with fabulous musicians and laid down a new track. We went to Capitol Studios, where my dad recorded, of course, True Love. I'm holding the exact chart he did. I'm singing with his microphone. I have on the headset, and I hear his voice come in, and it was a little overwhelming for me. I couldn't get through it. So finally we did.
It was emotionally overwhelming?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because there I am at Capitol, where all of these incredible people had recorded, and I can feel them all there. And our engineer, Al Schmidt, was the same one who did Natalie Cole and Nat King Cole's Unforgettable. So we were doing ours, so it was Dean and Dina, Nat and Natalie. I got through it. I went back into the booth to hear the playback, and it was unbelievable. I mean, I started to cry, because our voices sounded so right together. It was just beautiful. It was like we would breathe at the same time. So I sing the duet with my dad. We have these videos going on behind me, and it's quite a special moment in the show, and it's fun.
Is it tough to recreate that moment, that emotion, that first time that you kind of heard your dad in the headphones doing it in a live performance?
It's not, because the minute I see a picture of him, when I see the video, because there's a beautiful picture of me on my dad's lap when I'm just a very little girl, and the way he's looking at me, and it's like I've really got to stop myself. You've got to, you want to be right there. You want to be vulnerable, but you can't just fall apart. You're in the middle of a show, but you get right there. So I can recreate that for myself, just to hear his voice, then to see the photo. So, I'm back there, and it's wonderful.
You've been recording since you were a teenager, I think?
Yes.
How long have you been singing? Have you always been singing?
I've always been singing, and it's just in my genes. And I'm sure that's why I was named Dina Martin, Dean with an A. But I've always been singing and dancing and acting. It's just part of me.
But not always this style of music.
No, this has been about 10 years now. And, I started in country and then, of course, rock and roll, and rhythm and blues and things like that. But this, the Great American Songbook, and the songs of my dad and Uncle Frank Sinatra and Uncle Sammy Davis Jr. and Rosemary Clooney, Bobby Darin, Ella Fitzgerald. It's just, I grew up with all of this. I was a little girl, but I saw them. They were at my home. I watched them, went to their shows, and absorbed all of this. So it's definitely in my DNA, and I just love doing it. And I learned from the best.
I want to ask about growing up your father's daughter. Mm-hmm. Jerry Lewis once described Dean Martin as the most relaxed man he'd ever met. And that's a lot of the persona that came through when he was on stage, I think, and a lot of what he cultivated. Did you know him at home as relaxed, or did you know another side of your father? What was it like growing up with him?
There was no other side of him. That's who he was. It was funny about him, and he could get out there on stage, and he was amazing and fun and funny with that gorgeous voice, and that's how he was at home. He really and truly was. It's funny that you mentioned Jerry Lewis saying that about Dad. Lucille Ball also, she said, Dean Martin is so relaxed, he makes cooked spaghetti look tense, and it's true. But that's who he was, and he was just nice and natural. Yeah, he was relaxed.
Well, again, that was certainly the image that came across on stage. He often had a drink on stage, and, this doing a performance like this night after night really does take a toll on you. And just try to ask this gently, how did he do it while he was drinking?
He wasn't drinking.
He wasn't drinking.
No, so that was his gimmick. He would have a drink, yeah. not on stage. In fact, actually what they would do is they would bring And I remember this at the Sands Hotel, because we would sit ringside. And before the show, the waiter would bring a little glass of Martinelli's apple cider. And it would be sitting on the table so that he could, when he came out, and he would have a drink in his hand, which was Martinelli's apple cider, and he would do his show. And then during the show, he would come over and he'd say, oh, I need another drink. And then he would pick up the drink and drink that one also. So he perpetuated that, you know, that he was drinking and he was smoking. You know, and I'm so sorry he did that. But, you know, he would have a drink after. He would have, you know, a beer, he said, at lunch, and then a glass of wine at dinner. But he never would have been able to accomplish what he did. When I think about the nightclubs, the records, the movies, the TV show, I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous that people actually thought that, you know, or still think that.
Well, he did, you know, he did sort of, it's interesting, he did sort of cultivate that image, and as did Frank Sinatra and Sammy right. Davis Jr. It's interesting to think about it as sort of a carefully crafted image, because these guys all seemed so relaxed and like they just got up there, and you know that a lot of it is improvised.
A lot of it was improvised, when I think about the three of them, and I know you never saw them on stage together, but it was unbelievable. They had such respect for each other. They were so good at what they did. I mean, they could sing and dance, and they were funny, and they had a good time. And they knew they put in their work. You know, all those years they were at the top of their game. They were the best, and they could relax and have fun, and they enjoyed being with each other, and the audience just ate it up. But they cultivated that, their image, but they knew what they were doing. They were fabulous, and they were generous with each other. There was no jealousy there.
I heard you say that actually in another interview, that they weren't jealous of each other, and it's like the stereotypical trapping of celebrity is like being jealous of others. How do you think they avoided that and stayed grounded?
I think because they were all different. They all were the best at what they did. And, you know, I mean, they idolized each other. You know, I mean, Frank Sinatra just loved Dad. You know, I mean, they loved being together, but they respected each other. And I remember when I asked Frank Sinatra about how do you sing? And he was telling me, he said, it's all about the air. I take in a big breath. And he got very serious. And he said, you know, you push from the diaphragm. And I can tell even before a note comes out if I'm going to be on pitch or not. I said, does my dad do that? He says, no, your father has no idea what he's doing. He just does it. You know, so it was, they had this respect, and they loved each other. And none of them had to be jealous of the other, because they were all perfect at what they did. And they were smart guys.
You wrote a memoir back in 2004 that's now being turned into a movie.
Yes,
I understand Joe Mantegna's on board to direct.
Yes, he is.
And Jennifer Love Hewitt is going to be playing you in the movie.
Yes, going to play me. Yes.
And you don't have anybody to play your father. Is that process still ongoing?
Yes, yeah. It's ongoing. And it, you know, how do you find someone who can play Dean Martin? Because he was so unique and so special. And this movie has, and I will take our time. We will take our time, because it's got to be just right, because he deserves that respect. But there was something about my dad and that was so, I can't even think of a word. But if you would look at him, he had like a look in his eye that he knew something that we didn't know, you know, that everything was okay. And maybe that's why he seemed so natural and, you know, everything's going to be all right. It's like he knew something. But he had that charisma. He was so funny. I mean, he was just naturally funny. So finding someone who's, first of all, tall, dark, handsome, you know, great, has that way about him. I just don't know. I haven't really seen anybody like that yet.
You started in country music, and your father was also a fan of country music, right?
Yes, he was. And in fact, he sang a song with, was it Conway Twitty? And it was my first country song. So that was fun to hear him with Conway Twitty. But, you know, I love that music. He loved that music. And I have to say, people were telling him at the time, what are you, crazy? You're going to do country music, you know, when you're, you know, the Great American Songbook. But he loved it. He was so down to earth. And there was just something about those country songs that were just true and real. And he felt them.
Do you think that any influence from the country music made its way into his music, into your music?
It definitely made it, its way into my music and also into my dad's. And he did a few country country albums. But he always had that kind of laid-back, nice voice, you know, the, I mean, that warm voice. So I'm sure that he you know, music had influenced him, of course, and it influenced me, yes.
You were also a fan of rock and roll. That was and you, the bands of the 60s and Elvis and the Beatles, and I understand – Buffalo Springfield performed.
Yes, Buffalo Springfield performed. Yes, I'll never forget when I went to get them. Actually, you know, I went to pay their manager, and so it was Neil Young and Stephen Stills and Dave Crosby. You know, and they came over to our house. I lived at 601 Mountain Drive in Beverly Hills. It was my 18th birthday, and they show up. You know, and they warm up, and we had a fantastic time because they were huge at the. They weren't. They were the Buffalo Springfield. They were just getting started. And, you know, so it was so much fun. The people loved it, and they were great. And then, of course, you know, my dad called the police on the party. Got to be 11 o'clock, and he'd like to go to bed early. So he called the Beverly Hills police and said, those Martins are making too much noise.
You know, he came from an earlier generation of music, obviously. How did he feel about the music that became popular in the 60s?
First of all, he loved what we, you know, what we liked. You know, he thought it was, you know, there's a lot of noise and everything. He liked Elvis. And, of course, my sisters and I, we all had posters of Ringo and Paul and, you know, I mean, you name it. He was very happy, however, when he knocked the Beatles out of first place with Everybody Loves Somebody in 1964. He was so proud of that. He called Elvis and Frank Sinatra, and he said, well, I did it. I knocked the Beatles out of, you know, the number one spot. You haven't. So he was proud about that. He liked it, but he would prefer his music any day, you know. But he wasn't judgmental about things, so.
Your father's style of music seems to be enjoying somewhat of a comeback, and I'm thinking of artists like Michael Bublé. Oh, yeah. And Harry Connick Jr. has been around for a while. I'm wondering, who is the primary audience do you think, for that kind of music now? And who typically is at your shows?
You know, it's funny. Typically at the shows, and now, you know, and I have to say now, you know, maybe they're 60 years old, 70, 80, they could be 90, they're 20, and they're, you know, and they're 30 years old. I mean, I get teenagers also. But for the most part, of course, you know, they're, you know, I mean, 40, 50 years old. But to see a younger crowd, you know, and they're coming. But what's great for me is to sit out and I look and here are these, you know, young, you know, 20-somethings, beautifully dressed. And then we have, you know, the older people who are beautifully dressed, loving the music. It's everybody's loving this kind of music because it's great music. I have wonderful musicians. And I think that it crosses lots of genres because if it's good, people are going to love it. It doesn't have to be rock and roll or country or the Great American Song, but as long as it's good music and you know, it's you know, the musicality is there, people are going to love it.
Well, Dina Martin, thank you so much for joining me on Newsworks tonight.
Thank you very much. Wonderful questions. I had a great time.